All right. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. And welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this snowy Wednesday afternoon. We haven't had a lot of snowstorms, so this looks like a pretty good one. Terry Savage is on a phone line as she joins us on most Wednesdays. Terry, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
All right, so I was saying earlier that it's all about saving for retirement and contributing to your 401k and how to balance that and where to put it and things like that. One of the things I've never really understood or read much about, and you just wrote about it at terrysavage.com, is how to take the money out when it's time. It's not one of the things I know anything about. And it's funny because I'm reading a book right now called The End of Average, and it's by Harvard professor Todd Rose. And he talks about how when we plan, when we try to sort of aspire to what is typical or what is average, we're really pleasing no one because nothing is absolutely average. It's kind of an unattainable goal. And you start your column this week by writing about the flaw of averages. Explain that for me.
Well, I want to give credit for where it's due for this concept. It was created by this incredible economic thinker named Sam Savage. No relation, but he actually was at the University of Chicago. Now he's out at Stanford.
Isn't that weird? There's two incredible economic thinkers with that name.
Sam and I became friends when I wrote my book, The Savage Number. And that's when he first started explaining the flaw of averages. By the way, there's a website, www.flawofaverages, if you're interested in what I'm saying. But in the column, let me give you a great example of the flaw of averages. Picture the guy who drowns crossing the river with an average depth of 3 feet. Yeah, on the banks it was 6 inches deep, and in the middle as he walks across, it's 8 feet deep. That is the flaw of averages. I'll give you another flaw of averages. A guy stands with 1 foot in a bucket of boiling water and another foot in a bucket of ice water and says, hey, on average, I feel fine. Okay, I think this mental picture is really important to understand why averages, and I talk about averages a lot, the average historical return of the stock market, the average this, the average that. But when it comes particularly to retirement planning and withdrawal planning, averages can be very, very dangerous.
So how is it that what do we do? Because one of the things you write about here is a Monte Carlo simulation, and I don't understand that at all.
Well, let me back up. You're getting way ahead, and you're going to scare people off. So first of all, one thing we know about retirement withdrawals from your retirement plans is that at some point the government's going to make you take minimum required withdrawals, whether you want to or not, even if you have other money to live on. So it's good if you have extra money. But for people who are trying to make their money last as long as they do, averages are really a dangerous process. For instance, between 1970 and 2000, the average return on the stock market was a little over 10%. But if you start and if you just used averages, that could have sustained an average withdrawal rate of about 8% a year, except for one thing. That in the early years, let's suppose you started out in 1970 with $250,000. In the early years, you withdrew 8% of that. Remember, 1970 was the beginning of a bear market that really lasted until 1982 when the bull market took off. Well, if you had taken out 8% a year from 1970 to 1982, you would have run out of money in 11 years before the bull market that created those averages even started. So when you're getting into think about it now, right?
Yeah.
If the market went down, stayed down 8%, you were taking more and more out, you never got a chance to have your money grow during the bull market from 1982 to 2000. So what we get into with retirement planning, I'll give you one more technical term, it's called sequence of returns. You can't use averages. You have to think about what are the extreme possibilities. What if you start out withdrawing in a bear market and you take so much out you can never withdraw? There won't be enough at the end of your lifetime. So some people think, well, there's probably a formula. Maybe 4% a year will do it. It would, except for the fact that we're in an extraordinary period of low interest rates. And a diversified portfolio still might not give you enough return if you take out 4% inflation adjusted. So, and here's what, there's a simple answer. It's complex, but it's simple. Take your money to Monte Carlo.
Put it on a roulette wheel.
No, I'm not going for red or black. Monte Carlo is a very sophisticated form of computer modeling that models a wide range of variables and all their historic returns, so that you're not guessing, you're not averaging, but you're getting a very great simulation about creating an investment strategy that has the best probability of either A, making your money last your lifetime, or leaving enough left over for your children and so forth.
And that's something you can do with a financial advisor.
Yeah, here's the deal. You cannot do this on these online calculators. Most financial planners use Monte Carlo withdrawal modeling. Fidelity, Vanguard, and my favorite is T. Rowe Price. If you're a client, they'll do this for you. You'll need a little bit of money there. You work with a financial planner, and they give you a strategy, A, for how to invest, and B, how much to withdraw from which specific types of accounts, that gives you the best chance of making your money last as long as you do.
That's Terry.
And that's what the column is right now.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about annuities and Social Security deferral as well. We need to take a break, and we'll get to that in just a sec. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Terry Savage is on a phone line today, and we're talking about what to do once it's time to retire. You save the money, you've got your nut. How do you allocate it to live the rest of your life with what you've saved? Now, Terry, tell me about the differences between an immediate annuity and a longevity annuity.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is the subject of a book, The Savage Number. How much money do you need to retire? But part of your life has been accumulating enough, and then you reach that moment where, hey, how do I live on this for the rest of my life? You hope you're not falling off a cliff. And that requires a whole series of plans. The first is investing your rollover from your 401k and withdrawing. That's something, as I said, you do Monte Carlo modeling at a Fidelity, Vanguard, or T. Rowe Price. Next thing is Social Security. I'm going to write another column on that. You want to defer as long as you can, because every year you defer up until age 70 is going to give you about an 8% increase in your base check. And don't forget, if there's inflation in the future, there will be, you'll get your increase on that larger base.
But I've been working all my life for that Social Security. It's tempting. There it is. It's just waiting for me.
No. You really, if you possibly can, want to wait as long as you can. The next thing is, okay, but if it's good to know you're going to get a Social Security check, and let's just presume we will, and that in the upper brackets you won't get those benefits taxed away. The next thing you might want to do is have an additional monthly check that you can't outlive. That's just an immediate annuity. Give an insurance company some money, and they'll give you a monthly check as long as you live. Of course, that won't go up with inflation. And if you die in 3 years, the rest of the money is kept by the insurance company.
So why would you want to do that? I guess there's some security there.
An additional, with a portion of your money, you might want an additional fixed amount so you know that your basic living expenses are covered except for inflation, okay?
Okay.
But we've got the money still in your 401k invested in a good portion of stocks, even in retirement, so stocks have always beat inflation over the long run. So that's why you have some investments in equities. You have Social Security. You might want an immediate annuity. And then you might really worry that, if I live to be 85 or 80 and my money is not making it, covering, you can create an annuity that I've written about before called a longevity annuity, where it starts at age 85. And because you give them the money now at age 60 or 62 and say, I don't want payments till I'm 86, 82, 78, that will give you a larger monthly check. You do that with an insurance company, of course. It's a very big, sound one. So there are a lot of strategies. That's what I'm writing about all the time at terrysavage.com.
We got a minute left, but let's talk about people who might be near retirement, because another column you wrote is about the fact that the stock market has come back a little bit. Maybe it is time to think about selling some of it off.
I wish I could time the market. I can't. But 2 days ago, I posted a column, or the night before last, before the market started going down, saying, look, you were complaining and complaining in the early January when the market was crashing, wishing you would have sold out earlier. The market has had at that point rebounded. Actually, it's not down so much today. It was down yesterday. Start thinking about, as you're older and you're in retirement, as part of this Monte Carlo process, do I have too much in the stock market? If you stuck with me, you've had big gains over the last 7 or 8 years. And maybe it's time when the market rallies, not when it's falling and you're scared, when the market does have one of these rallies, to move a little to the sidelines. That is not advice for those who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s. You still have a long time to make stocks work for you. But those who are really close to retirement or even in it, might want to use these rallies to lighten up a little bit. Don't get paralyzed. You know, you get paralyzed by fear on the downside. Don't get paralyzed by greed on the upside.
It's not going to last forever on either way.
The market will always move higher in the long run. The question is, how long is your run?
Terry Savage. You can read more at terrysavage.com. Thanks for joining us, and go shovel your walk now, will you?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is a snowy Wednesday afternoon. Scott Kleinberg writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune, and he generally brings a bit of sunshine with him, and today's no different.
Thank
Scott,
you, Steve.
When I started in the radio business, if you wanted to know the weather, you had to get up and turn on the radio, maybe buy the newspaper, to figure out what it was going to be like. Well, that certainly has changed.
Oh, yes.
With smartphones and computers and all of that. And now, when you log on to Facebook in the morning, you're going to be getting your snowy forecast?
Yes. They are going to start putting forecast, according to them, when it is helpful at the top of your
What does that mean? You mean so like today, a day like today?
You would think a day like today would trigger the helpful part of the forecast, yes. So it won't be there all the time, but when you need it, they promise.
Now, Scott is very happy today because he's been predicting that there won't be much snow in the area.
Correct. 0 to 1 inch.
you feel like you're going to win this little bet with yourself, but you know, it just started.
Yes, I know. I feel very confident that I'm right.
And so if you're right and you've posted this on Facebook, you could like it on Facebook today.
Yes.
With the new sort of, what, 5 or 6 different emojis that are, they're not emojis, are they? What are they?
They are, they're called reactions. They're
reactions.
Technically emojis,
okay.
but they're reactions.
All right. So they've rolled out, now Facebook, we've been talking about this for a while.
Yep.
They've rolled out this where if you want to do something other than just like something, They've got these funny little faces that you can click on.
Yes, correct. So you have your regular like button. You have 5 others. There's sad. There's wow. There's ha ha. There's angry. And there's love.
And so you come in here today and you go, oh, have you tried it yet? And I said, no. And you said, oh, you should try it. It's a little addictive.
Exactly what I said. Yes. And it really is.
And what did I say? I said, things that are addictive to you, Scott, aren't always to everyone. But it kind of is. I mean, I'm just playing it.
It is. Yes.
But the thing, though, and I'm looking at them now on the Facebook page.
Right.
And, you know, the idea was that you don't want to like someone's sad news.
Correct.
Right? If it's a funeral for someone, you don't want to hit the like button.
Correct.
But these animated things are kind of silly, so there's not much somberness to them.
And that's what a lot of people are saying. The fact that they're animated makes it feel like they're not as serious as they could be. And when you look on a mobile device, on a desktop, they don't move. On a mobile device, they actually bounce around and smile and do funny things. So, yeah, that is a very, very good point. But Facebook tried everything in its power not to create a dislike button, which is what everybody wanted, just
right.
Turn the thumb upside down. And they balked at that idea because they didn't want to have a negative conversation. So this was the way they thought they would fix that problem.
So we've got love. We've got, I can't even read them now. We've got ha-ha.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Sad. And angry.
Yep. And I would imagine, they haven't said this, but I will go out on the limb just like I did on the weather, and I will say that when holidays come around, there'll probably be bonus ones. I have a feeling that will be a big part of the strategy.
So
ways
they'll
to make
sneak
it
in like a Santa Claus or a firecracker or things like
yep,
that.
Yep, jack-o'-lantern for Halloween. I have a feeling that's something that will come down the road.
There are a lot of funny things going on in that social media mind of yours, Scott. tell me about paying for something soon with your face.
that's my headline. I like that. That's a really good way of putting it. So MasterCard has been testing this thing in California, and it's called Selfie Pay. There's probably a more technical name to it, but people are calling it Selfie Pay. And basically, instead of a password, instead of a thumbprint like Apple Pay, you actually use a photo of your face. So it's like a biometric type of thing that you use with your phone.
Okay, so this could be huge.
Oh, this could be absolutely huge.
Explain for me, walk me through how it works. So I'm in line at the Hornsby's or the Target or something like that. Is it something remote? So if I could be with a cashier.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Using my credit card.
Yep.
And then they want verification?
Yep. You aim the phone towards you, and it'll have something in its memory where it, like the fingerprint, it would know what you look like. So if for some reason you walk in and your head's all wet from the rain and snow, you don't have to fool it into looking at who you are. You know, it knows who you are on record, and it's able to modify it on the fly.
So this is if you're paying by phone?
Yes. This is if you're paying mobily with a mobile device.
Okay.
Yes.
And Go ahead.
But this could totally replace the need to ever remember a password. And even now, if you try to use a fingerprint on Apple Pay, if your hand's wet, it doesn't work. So this is something that could be the next level. And I'm not saying other companies won't do it, but this is a great start.
So where are we with the – because I've not tried it yet. I was just at Starbucks, and I go every day, and I saw someone, you know, paying with their phone. And it, just today, I'm looking at it, I'm like, I'm talking about innovation all the time.
Yep.
It's not very innovative anymore. I should at least jump on that slow-moving wagon, and I haven't yet. But, I mean, it's going to be the way we buy things.
I really think it will be. I mean, I have absolutely no problem taking out my credit card and doing all those things. You know, now you have the chip-enabled cards that you put in the machine or whatever. But my Apple Watch right now has Apple Pay. So when I go get my coffee in the morning, I put my wrist up to the reader, and the people behind the counter still say, wow, because they think it's cool. And I think it's cool because I don't have to do anything. I just know that it's right there with me.
Okay, where does that money come from?
Well, that particular thing is my actual debit card.
It's
so
your
it's
debit
connected
card.
To okay. the debit card. And you can do the same thing type of thing at Starbucks using money on a Starbucks card.
So can I use it with a credit card?
You can. You can. Apple Pay is what I know most about, and they're adding banks and credit unions and things every day. So all the major credit card companies are on there, and then there's smaller store cards that are being added all the time. But, so, yeah, I would think anything you have.
I'm sorry because I've been teasing you today, so I'm sorry if I sound a little stupid here or slow, because don't get it. So anything I buy with a credit card, I can pay for with my phone if the vendor has the equipment.
If the vendor has the equipment, yes, exactly. And they have to outfit it with that machine that allows that to happen. But more and more places are doing that all the time.
There's one thing I want to talk to you about, or maybe a couple if we can squeeze them in. But, you know, the voting, the Democrats are voting in South Carolina on Saturday.
Right.
And one of the more, Bernie Sanders had a great ad in Iowa, got a great cred, you know, for the Simon and Garfunkel ad. One of the touching ads in South Carolina has been a Hillary Clinton radio spot with the names of moms who've lost their children to violence and in some cases police violence. It's voiced by Morgan Freeman, right? Morgan Freeman, sort of the voice of, I don't know, what is he? He's the voice of everything, commercialization, but also sort of social conscience in many way.
Yep.
And now he's going to help direct us on Waze?
On Waze, that the traffic app that is owned by Google that lets you get directions and those kinds of things. Yeah, he's partnering with them to promote a movie that he has coming out. So for specific things that are happening in traffic, and I'm not too familiar with this movie, but for specific things that are happening with traffic, his voice will be the voice of what's happening in traffic.
And
other actors have done something like this before. Stephen Colbert has worked with them. Arnold Schwarzenegger has worked with them. So, I mean, that's a really cool way to advertise something.
That's a great promotional vehicle, isn't it?
I love that idea.
I didn't get that when I first read it. I thought he had some sort of deal where he was actually being the voice. He was being the Siri guy, but this is just a promotional thing for his movie.
Just a promotional thing. But I'll tell you what, I see no reason why in the future you couldn't do something like that where you can pick your voice and you can have the person doing it all the time. I mean, why wouldn't you want that opportunity? It's cool.
That's Scott Kleinberg. And if I had to pick a sort of personalized like button for you, I think today it would be wow.
I'm good with wow. That's awesome.
Check those out, the different ways to say you like things or don't like things on Facebook. Scott Kleinberg, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Ori, and Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is a snowy Wednesday afternoon, more snowy for some than others. If you live to the south or to the southeast, you're certainly feeling it more than the rest of us, and not so bad to the north and northwest. I know Kim Gordon is watching that, and she'll have the latest on the forecast coming up here in the news. I think it's this Friday that we get the latest GDP numbers. We get some consumer spending numbers. Earlier this week, we heard about the Consumer Confidence Index in the United States, and it was down a bit. It was down from what economists were expecting. So one of the things I wanted to ask Poonam Goyal about, senior U.S. retail analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. They're out with a snapshot of the U.S. consumer for the year 2016. And Poonam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about that. I mean, I think we're supposed to be getting more confident. Looks like the February number did not exactly exude confidence.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of that has to do with just volatile stock markets. Though if you look at the confidence number itself, it's still higher than where we were a couple of years ago. So, you know, you sometimes do see a dip, and the markets probably had something to do with that. But that doesn't mean that the consumer isn't spending. They're still, you know, happy. Interest rates are lower, home prices are rising, fuel prices are lower, they have more money in their pockets, they're spending more, they're paying down debt. So they're not, you know, they're not suffering as much as you would think.
There's a little bit more pressure on the job market for hiring, right? So wages are going up a bit, might be going up a bit more. What are we spending our money on?
We're spending our money on improving our homes. I mean, we can see that if you look at just earnings from Lowe's, Home Depot, they've been strong. We're traveling. We're spending on experiences. And we're spending where we can find value. So think of like a TJ Maxx, a Marshalls. You know, people are still going there and shopping because they see value, and that's what they want.
That's interesting because I think I'd also read somewhere that we're spending more on well, for lack of a better phrase, mom and pop shops or smaller retailers, not so much the big chains, the ones with a more anonymity. We're tending to go to where people know us and we know the people. Do you see that?
I'm not sure if I don't have trends for mom and pop shops, but I do know that people are looking for experiences and they're looking for service. So, you know, if you have a mom and pop shop that's providing you with good customer service and that has the items that you want, sure, because that's what people are looking for. They want something different. They don't want to go into the store, buy a product that you can get anywhere else and pay more for it. That's one thing they don't want.
I have a little travel business, so I'm interested in people who want to spend their money on experience. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about when you say spending on experience?
Yeah, so, you know, you want to spend on yourself. You want to make sure that you're traveling, you're enjoying yourself. You don't necessarily care about a brand as much. If you think about it, about 4 or 5 years ago, you cared about a logo on your shirt because it showed, you know, where you're shopping, how you're shopping, who you are. Today, that doesn't matter. Today, you can be wearing a shirt from H&M, and it could be just a staple shirt, and you'll carry it with a Gucci bag, and that's okay.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that because that's just one of the things that's always driven me crazy. You know, it's hard to buy a shirt that you like sometimes without a label on it, but if more and more of us have stopped doing that, maybe fewer and fewer of those shirts will be for sale.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and that's actually a growing pain for many of these retailers because now they have to figure out another way to differentiate themselves.
I know people are looking at the economy and they, you know, they're worried about maybe a recession coming. Is consumer purchasing strong enough to stave off any recession?
I mean, you know, recession or not, I'm not sure, but I can tell you that as we sit today, consumers are still spending. You know, when you have a low interest rate environment, when you have still equity in your homes, when you have access to credit, when savings rates are at 5-6%, it's hard to say, are we headed into a recession or not? I mean, your answer may be as good as mine. I mean, I'm not an economist.
Oh,
like,
Poonam, you better hope that your answer is better than mine because we'll both be in trouble.
Well, an economist could maybe better answer the question.
Poonam is a senior U.S. retail analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. All right, so if that's where we are now, where do you think we might be, you know, at the end of this year or maybe a year from now? Do you see any sort of transformation this year?
I think the biggest transformation is going to really be on loyalty, on experience. I think retailers specifically will have to offer more than just a product to drive sales. And they can't just offer it at full price. Value will be key throughout the year. It really doesn't matter what you sell. You have to give the customer a reason to shop. You have to give them value. And that's going to hurt retailers' margins, but they have to find a way to evolve. They have to get the customer into the store. And consumers are shopping online, so we're going to see more and more spending shifting either on the web or through their mobile device.
It sounds like an increase in wisdom, maybe a little bit wiser consumer this year. Poonam Goyal, U.S. retail analyst, Bloomberg Intelligence. Thanks very much for joining us today.